handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 1:30 p.m. on October 5th, 2020. A little bit of a late lunch hour for me, but so much going on, I figured let me get this out of the way. Not that I think of you guys as something I need to get out of the way, but that's exactly how I think of this. Big week, huh? Donald Trump doing his best to end whatever career I have. This is a real unstoppable force meets an immovable object. We've got Donald Trump on one side, just dominating the world, just eating up everything, destroying everything. And on the other hand is my comedy career, which has proven so impenetrable to long-term success. And it's a real, you know, it's like the greatest, instead of offensive, let's say offensive, you know, it's a little play on pronunciations. It's the offensive, the greatest offensive offense of all time versus the greatest career defense known to man. And who will win out? Because I had a couple of voiceovers for Trump attack ads all lined up. And all of a sudden, I order a mic, a special microphone to record said attack ads. And then all of a sudden, this big bitch says he has COVID and trouble breathing and is fat and fucking worthless and a piece of shit. But, you know, respect and prayers go out to his family. But they postponed the ads. And I was like, well, of course you did. Of course you did. Now, here's the thing, folks. This is why it's such an interesting point in my career. And for those of you that don't know, I could rattle off all the various jinxes that have happened in my career. So let's do that. Let's take a trip down JL's failed career memory lane. Easily, 2007, make my network TV debut, crush a late night set on the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. Now, what happens after that is they want me back because it really was. I crushed that fucking set. And I was like, sweet, this is happening. My career's happening. Yes. And then what happens is my management place that I had for all of, you know, 5 months, fire the guy managing me. So I make the, you know, understandable but clear mistake to stick with the agency because I go, you guys are the big dogs. Like, I got to stay with you. I know you haven't signed me to anything, but, you know, come on. You guys used your clout to get me this. So I stick with them instead of the manager himself. And it turns out he was a big champion of mine, I guess, and then they assigned me to somebody who was not. And I just sort of dither and wither away. And as they're dithering, I contact the Late Late Show and say, hey, just reaching out. I was just on. Just wanted to see if we could maybe line up another appearance. You know, the six-month kind of gap that people like on late-night TV. So I go, oh, yes, no, we'll be in touch. Like, I remember you. Great set. Which is a fact. It's not like an opinion or gassing me up. It was a great set. Excuse me. And then the so now the writer's strike hits. of 2008. So manager tells me to find somebody else. They kind of squander the 7 or 8 months that could have used that late night credit as a jumping off point. So they tell me I should go elsewhere. And as you know, I've been on a 12 year quest ever since. Despite all my hard work, accomplishments, accolades, credits, it's been a 12-year saga to find a new manager and, never have had an agent in 17 years. But anyway, who's complaining? So then the writer's strike, the writers come back, and I email, and it's as if my email was going into trash, which is one of those things I'll never understand. How, okay, well, you know I'm a really good comic because I did your show, so do I really need the middleman now? And even if you need me to have the middleman, do you have to completely ignore me now that I don't have a middleman? That was a real first harsh lesson in comedy for me, because it was just, even you'd think crushing and having their, you know, would have been enough, but apparently it's just like, no, we'd rather just deal with people with people. So, 2010... I have the great fortune of emceeing for Patrice O'Neill at the DC Improv. Goes well. I've regaled these compliments before, but if you hear his two albums, I am the introductory voice on both albums from two separate times hosting for him. So we get along well. He has a feature, a friend of his, Harris, who was his feature. So I've never asked a comedian if I could open for them in my life. But I was coming down to D.C. again to do some shows in their sort of side room. And then Allison, the manager down there, sends me an email and says, hey, Patrice is coming back. And he asked if you could host for him again. Like I've always said, still the greatest compliment I think my comedy career has ever received. Even though I was, not the comic I am now, I was still somebody with some real chops. By 2011, I was prepping for a third album. So I was getting there. I was getting to where I wanted to be. I think since 2013, when Keep My Enemies Closer came out, that represents the beginning of a sustained level of excellence for me, at a next level. But I was very good. And I remember Patrice saying to me the first time we worked together, saying, I like that Rocky bit of yours. And I said, oh, I didn't do that. And, he said, yeah, but what do you think? I'm not going to like look to see who's opening. And I thought that was awesome. That was also awesome because that means he had at least checked out one of my bits, a bit that I think is, a greatest hit of mine. So he complimented a bit and then asked me to host for him again. And when I got there, he said, oh man, I thought you lived in DC. And I go, like, he wasn't trying to get me to go from New York to DC. But he just assumed an MC would be local. Fortunately, my brother lived in DC, with his family. So I had a place to stay and, instead of just a family visit, it was basically, a family visit plus make $300 and, get to do some comedy without having to pay for your own hotel, et cetera. So he asked for me back and we another great week. He shit on my emceeing, which was fun. It's on the second album of his, which I enjoyed because he said, if I was Harlan Williams, I'd smack the shit out of JL because I was the way they do announcements at the DC Improv. Is you kind of go like, bop, 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 no, that's my set. Then the feature goes up and you're like, bam, 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 okay. And then you're like, all right, everybody. Anyway, coming to the club soon is so-and-so, so-and-so. If you want to rent out the room for a private event, please look us up. And if you wear a t-shirt every Tuesday, it's free and we're not afraid of burning in hell. Every time I get annoyed with myself, I'm just going to turn into the Ron Reagan atheist commercial voice. But he gets up there after me because one of the comics coming soon was Ron Reagan Jr. No, was Harlan Williams. And I remember Patrice just like giving a long look at me, part of a joke. He goes, God damn, JL. If I was Harlan Williams, I'd slap the shit out of you. Hey guys, Harlan Williams is coming. I don't give a fuck. Like, it was just very funny. But I thought at that point, now I wasn't violating my rules that I was going to message Patrice at some point and say, hey, I'm not, nor could I, but I'm not trying to get in between you and your feature. But sometimes a feature, may not be able to make a gig. And I would love it if you'd consider me. And if not, that's okay. But if you'd consider me to bring me on the road, if Harris is unavailable. And Harris was like his friend. So it's not like you're trying to steal somebody's role. You can't steal it. But, you know, it's just a chance to work with one of the greats. And he has at least shown some interest in my skill level. I never sent that email because a few months later, Patrice would have the stroke that would kill him. Okay. So we move on from that. We're just trudging along. I come out with, I have, 2013 is until 2020, I would say 2013 was the best year of my career, not in terms of money or anything, but in terms of just sheer clout and notice and quality of work. That's when I released my Louis C.K. Tells the Classics sketch, which went viral and still is one of the things that comedians know me for the most. Because I was going after Louis C.K. when he was on top, not when he was scandal ridden or people were bored of him, but when he was like the king. And, you know, it was some cojones, but I remember telling the people doing my makeup and filming it. I said, here's the key. I know this is going to be good, but it's got to be perfect. It has to be unassailable because people are going to be very defensive and upset and go, hey, how, you can't do that. That's Louis, you fucking hater. So I said it has to be perfect, and it pretty much fucking was perfect. So I got a couple emails from managers and stuff who wanted to meet, and I was like, awesome, this is it. Fuck yeah. So I met with a couple. Nobody bit, which made me a little more bitter because I was like, well, I know I got the stand-up skills, and so what the fuck? And now I got the viral attention. So let's capitalize on this. And nobody did. And then later that year, I recorded and released Keep My Enemies Closer, which, you know, I say it and I'll say it again. If I was famous when that album came out, I don't mean famous, like world famous, but if I was like a comedian headlining the country with like a fan, like just a solid, if I was like a Greg Giraldo level comedian, I'm not saying a world famous household name, but just somebody with enough clout that they're known in the stand-up circles, that album would have made me famous. That album would have been the one that would have been on all the lists and maybe pushed for a Grammy, something like it was just, I genuinely believe Keep My Enemies Closer is just, I will do albums. Thoughts and Prayers, which came out in 2018, is a bigger lift in terms of time and whatnot. And something I'm just equally as proud of, but I just think Keep My Enemies Closer. It just, you know, maybe it's like that first championship ring that felt like I had some playoff teams in my previous albums, but Keep My Enemies Closer was my first championship ring. And I would say Thoughts and Prayers was my second ring, to make a sports analogy. But despite that album, despite the CK video, despite perking up on a couple of radars, nothing happened. So then I start doing do a sketch series the next year, and by luck I at Adam Carolla, who I'm a fan of his comedy. He's moved too far right into the sort of angry, aggrieved politics thing. He's entitled to that. I just don't enjoy it anymore. Like constant attacks on Elizabeth Warren and Black Lives Matter. Like that's the biggest those are the biggest problems. Is absurd and kind of offensive to me. But I still think he's a funny guy, and I never had any personal beef with him. But at the time, his show was, you know, 90% humor, 10% sort of libertarian politics. And I think the man is an incredibly funny, talented comedian. I just do. So I made like a video series where I impersonated a bunch of people, including Carolla. And he got, you know, I added him and he happened to be on Twitter at the time. I got a like from him. And then his producer contacted me and they asked me if I would make another video, that they loved the video. They played it on the air. And then that became just sort of an open invite from 2014 to 2016. I made eight. I was a guest on Carolla, like a real ass guest, like fly you out, sit in the studio, name on the episode title type guest, 8 times. And, you know, I got some fans from it, and that was great. And I made sketches for the show, and that was great. And then when I promoted Israeli Tortoise in 2016, album number 5, when I promoted Israeli Tortoise, the feedback was starting to get, it was like Trump was running now, we were in the middle of the election season, and there was just a little, the comments were no longer, hey, that guy was funny, hey, that guy was like, it was like, a lot of alt-righty kind of, like there's a Israeli Tortoise, the premise of the title track is basically comparing my mom and my dad and an uncle as they were getting older, mainly my mom and dad, but my uncle was on my mind too. And it was, you know, the idea that life for women is harder, but it makes them tougher when they're old. And with my mom, it was just like, you know, it's like the hare and the tortoise, you know, women just march along and life throws them all sorts of obstacles. And by the time they're 70, it's like, I've had cancer. I've had men leering at me. Perhaps I've been assaulted. I've had a period every month for most of my adult life, et cetera, et cetera. Like that, that I'm just explaining the joke. That's not the bit. It's there's laughs actually on the album, but you get what I'm saying. So that was the hare and tortoise. But I also mentioned, you know, and being a woman is like being, and this is sort of CK-ish, but being a woman is like being surrounded by enemies at all times, because it's just like, who would I rather be walking down a street at night alone, a 5'2" woman or a 6'7" man? And I said, it's like being Israel. It's like, yeah, you know, you got a lot going for you, but you're surrounded by enemies. So hence Israeli tortoise. And so basically Israeli tortoise means woman in the speak of JL. And, I explained that briefly on the bit, just like, what was the title, you know, what's the title about? Because it's a weird title. And of course, I got several tweets the next day citing data about how men are in more danger of violence and this and that. I'm like, yeah, well, because men fight other men. But like, it's such a stretch and so sad that when that a man, one of these incel types has to like actually start lecturing you on why it's actually more dangerous to be a man than a woman. And I'm going, Jesus Christ, you don't get what I'm saying. Like to feel like you, and that should have been a hint about Trump's rise, that there were irrational victims out there, that there were a lot of white male victims with irrational fears and seeking while simultaneously condemning, whether it be Black Lives Matter or other groups with legitimate historical and current grievances, while condemning them for victim mentality. But Trump is the ultimate like savior for white male victims who think they're victims of something. He is the, and I always, that was one of my beefs with Carolla. He always talked about, everybody talks about feelings. What about data? What about facts? And I go, there is no greater president catering to the feelings, the irrational, non-data founded feelings of any group than Trump for white men. That's it. He is the most feelings president and the least data driven, so it's absurd, but they can't see it. And because it's only when liberals have feelings that it's problematic. When conservatives have feelings, it's because their country is slipping away. But when black people have feelings about getting killed by the police, it's because the media has fed a false narrative to play on their and gin up their fears. It's obscene and it's absurd. The point being, I then stopped going on Carolla for a while. And I was like, God damn it. But, you know, I didn't lose a platform. I always had an invite to go on. But it was uncomfortable. And as his show went on, I stopped listening around mid-2017 because I thought, I get that our political views are different, but why are you still complaining about Elizabeth Warren in mid-2017 when Donald Trump is president and a fucking idiot? Like, why are you acting like Elizabeth Warren is the biggest threat to the country? Like how, if you want to complain about Obama's every little thing, so be it. Trump has little things and big things you can complain about if you're being sort of even-handed and fair. So I think Carolla's in more of that batch of like, they all suck and Trump sucks too. Whereas it's like, no, nobody's ever sucked like this. So then that ends that, but then just like that in 2016, I believe from 2016 to 2018, I start doing, on my own, some videos for the Dan Le Batard Show, audio really in the form of videos that I posted to YouTube. And I get a nice big fan base from the Dan Le Batard Show because I was doing, the co-host of the Dan Le Batard Show, Stu Gatz. I noticed one time that he sounded very Trump-like, inconsistent, but yet bold and arrogant. And that's kind of his character on the show. He's doing it for humor mostly. But I started re-recording word for word things Stu Gatz said as Trump. And it became a wildly successful segment on the show. Hugely popular. And I am, to this day, I wrote a blog about it, and he has said that it's false. But the thing is, I am certain that the producer of the show kind of set me up because he wanted to cancel me and then claimed that I was like an offensive comedian And in my head, I'm like, then why does everybody on the show still follow me on Twitter? And after that, I would also say the blog explains it all. If you just say who killed, if you Google who killed Stugatz and my name, it should come up right away. And I lay it out. And what I know for facts are laid out as facts. And what I think are possibilities or likelihoods, I label as possibilities and likelihoods. So I never state a false fact. I state facts and then my theory. And I think it makes total sense. But the point being, I was then booted off the Lebertard Show platform, a platform that was even more uniformly behind me than the Corolla audience. So that takes us to 2018. And I bang out Thoughts and Prayers. And it's my second championship ring as far as stand-up albums go. And then 2018 was a great year for me stand-up-wise. Relatively, you know, probably my most lucrative year as a stand-up comedian, which doesn't say much, but, you know, half my income was comedy-related, which was great. And then 2019 was a total bag of shit. I had a few gigs early in the year, and then from March to November, I had one gig headlining the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase, and that's what brought us all to law firm life and New Jersey life, and you know, basically just trying to write stuff on the weekends and hope for a few road gigs here and there. And then all of a sudden COVID hits, and it seems like, my God, is this not a message that this is what it took for me to have success? And then we fast forward all the way to this weekend and the greatest, perhaps final jinx for my comedy career is Donald Trump going to the hospital with COVID and people saying, well, you prayers for the president. And I go, I've already said my piece that I say prayers for the president once in a while, but I know what's going to happen. And they're already setting it up that they're already pitching ideas that Donald Trump knows COVID better than Biden ever could because he contracted and he has an intimate knowledge of it. So now, and I joked on Richard Marx's timeline on Twitter, I said, the next Trump ad will be like, as a rapist, nobody can fix the criminal. Nobody knows more about what's wrong with the criminal justice system than me. That's why you should vote for me. I'm Donald Trump and I support this message. Like that. Like that's the angle. It's going to be like, I'm a tax fraud and a rapist, and therefore I know what's wrong with government and criminal justice because I'm free. He'll probably spin that angle. So the point being that Trump managed to take a couple G's out of my pocket this weekend, although, you know, if he gets better, those G's will start flowing again. And much respect to people who ordered cameos this weekend from me as Trump. I think that is so good. That's such good support to be like, I know the president's on his deathbed. That's why I need you to hook me up with this birthday message as Trump, you know, before it's tasteless. No, I appreciate those greatly. And it's a conflicting feeling because I'm not a fan of death. I'm not a fan of people suffering, even if they're terrible people. I just don't dig it. I can be mad at somebody for certain things, but I don't have that kind of madness. Like that's where my anger usually ends, is loss of life or deep pain. Even if there's somebody who's inflicted it or wished it on other people, it's just, you know, it's not really in me. And I say that as somebody who has, you know, never experienced a loss in the family from foul circumstances. But I think you understand what I'm saying. So that's the update on the JL jinx. That was a nice long journey. But there, as you can see, there have been a lot of moments. And obviously, I don't, you know, the even more than Trump, the lip sync phenomenon was really. And I tried to convince people. I told people two things when they said, this is your moment. I said, first off, wait. We'll see how this gets fucked up. And, you know, it got fucked up because I got eclipsed by lip sync. And I'm not rehashing. I'm just saying that's another jinxy thing because all the wealth from this shit went to the top. Like I'm like second place of COVID comedy, and it's as in Glengarry Glen Ross. It's like first place is a Cadillac. Second place is a set of steak knives. Relatively speaking, I'm the set of steak knives winner from all this, despite putting out, you know, if you count the podcast, 120 episodes, each, you know, weekly for the last 2.5 years. You know, just all those things and the videos I've put out, like, you know, God knows how much content as Trump, original content as Trump. But you know, I'm still hustling. I got a guy trying to hustle to maybe get me looked at for a special. Will it work? Probably not. But I think I'm ready. I'm due. I've got it ready to go. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I don't know if I have anything else to talk about today. I mean, obviously Trump being sick, like they're horrible people. He's a horrible person. His supporters are horrible people. His enablers in Congress and his staff are horrible people. This would be like a Marilyn Manson, the horrible people. But what else is there? You know, there's nothing. He dominates everything. You know, I haven't watched sports. My Yankees are in the playoffs. LeBron is winning in the finals, and I'm not even watching any of that shit because my mind is so off sports. It's so weird. All I do is legal work and Trump work and try to get in an hour of reading or watch one episode of some show. And then you just start the day over again. It's very draining. But yeah, I got to watch the Yankees and or LeBron at some point, but I don't know when, folks. But let's see. This could be a short. I think this will be a short episode. I think a few plugs. There'll be more video content. If you're not already, you should be subscribed to both my YouTube channels. These are all the free things. And I'm pushing shamelessly for a Grammy nomination for Fireside Crap's The Deuce. It sold a lot of copies in May. I believe it was the number one selling album on comedy on iTunes and Amazon. And I remember it debuted at, I want to say it was like number 38 on the entire iTunes chart the day it came out. So that's no joke, folks. And I think, you know, it's a timely album. It's sort of a historical look at the Trump term pre-COVID. And I blew up during this time. So it feels like, public relations and whatnot and lack of management and agents have sort of limited my ability to reach that, get that message out stronger. But, you know, if you've got any clout with the Grammys, you know, vote and send some messages. And if not, just pray for Fireside Crap's The Deuce to get the recognition it deserves. You know, this is such a weird year that I feel like, yeah, maybe it could have a shot this year. Probably not. But you know what? It'd be cool. I don't know. I guess that's it. Buy my albums. Check out Making Podcasts Great Again. I have cameos, cameo.com/JLCAUVIN if you want to send a message as Trump. Also, there's going to be a lot of Mike Pence content this week. You guys have to be following me on, I'll say it, but I'm sure most of you follow me on some other platform, but I'll be doing a live Q&A on Wednesday night on /Trump on YouTube/Trump the Internet as Pence. And a lot of bonus stuff on Making Podcasts Great Again as well. But yeah, the JL jinx is all I really talked about today. But I just wanted to give some context, like Trump being the potentially the final jinx in my career. Is there anything else to talk about? I always forget. This happens every week. I will say this. I meant to do this on last week's episode, but I went to a Mexican restaurant with the righteous girlfriend, and it was very tasty. And I left a fat tip because now that I got mad loot, and also I feel bad. I'm like, yeah, nobody's coming. You know, the Mexican restaurant was doing a robust takeout business, but it was just a table of four having their drinks and their food, and me and my girlfriend. So my bill was like, I want to say my bill was like 38, and I was just like left a 20 in cash as the tip because I was like, you know what, there's not a lot of tables here. And we don't go out that often, so it's not hurting anybody. But the real reason I left that extra tip was I saw these two people come in. And, of course, I was distracted because they had a golden retriever. But in my head, part of me was like, why are you just bringing a golden retriever to this food area? Like, it was outdoor under a canopy seating. And very pleasant, very peaceful. And I was like, oh, golden retriever. But in my head, I was like, wait, like 5% of me that doesn't like golden retrievers was just like, or the 5% of me that believes in propriety over golden retrievers was like, why are you bringing your big golden retriever to this eating area? What are we doing? This isn't a park. And I saw that they had food in takeout containers. And what they had done was, and I guess, you know, a restaurant doesn't want to be, this isn't the time to be turning away customers, but they ordered their shit at the takeout counter, but then walked out and came back to the seating area, which has waitresses, sat down with their dog, busted out their food. I could tell they were trying not to get help from the wait staff, but then the wait staff was like, oh, do you want sauces or water? And they're like, oh, okay, yes, yes. And then they left without tipping. And I just thought to myself, I was like, that's like such a little piece of shit move. But that's the way I've always said, death penalty for people who litter. I'm more extreme than broken windows. I was like, you realize what kind of society we have? If you littered, you got the death penalty. But that was one of those things where I watched and I said, I got to leave a bigger tip just because those people suck. And it was just one of those things where I go, you bought the food, but to avoid the potential like $8 tip, you didn't go through the wait staff. You just waited for the food and then walked with your fucking big dog into an eating area and just like ate and left some shit to clean up. And not a fucking dime, not a fucking dime for tipping. I just think that's such a disgrace. And it annoyed me. And I forgot to mention it. I forgot to mention it last week on the podcast because it happened last Sunday night. So I apologize for forgetting that story. But just in case you think I'm losing my skills of angry observation, I'm not. They're highly fine-tuned still. Oh, and I think that's probably it. I know I'm forgetting probably some other story that really annoys me. My upstairs neighbors came back. They were gone for like a week, and I was really thinking they had moved. And then last Thursday, I'm just sitting doing work, and around 1 o'clock, I hear boop, 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 boop. That's the little chubby kid I guess they have. But then the father just doesn't seem to know how to walk. I'm a big motherfucker. Won't you back that ass up? No, I'm a big dude, and I don't pound the floor. Maybe that's why I was such an elegant big man in the paint, because I had those Hakeem Olajuwon feet. But in all seriousness, I don't pound the floor when I walk. And the person upstairs, who I'm certain is not nearly the same size as me, just like like I don't understand how you walk like that unless you just have like stiff knees and fat heels. I don't get it. It just sounds like somebody intentionally like goose stepping. Maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe I live up downstairs from some Nazi marching band people. But that's another gripe. And what else is there? I don't want to forget. I mean, this has already been a very forgettable episode, but I don't want to forget anything if there's something. Rod of the Black Guy Who Tips asked me if I would get back to sports gambling. And I know some people miss that. I was doing an Uncut Gems segment. And I will eventually get back to sports gambling, but right now for me to gamble, to feel something, I'm so stressed out about life and my multiple streams of income and work and, Trump and COVID that gambling doesn't represent the same high. And I would have to gamble significantly more, to feel that high, a level that I don't really want to gamble. So eventually sports gambling will be back. But I'm not feeling it right now. Like I said, I'm not even watching sports cause I'm so out of my mind because of everything that's happened. And I'm not saying there are more important things. I'm just saying literally it changed the way I think about sports. Like I used to be like French Open, Wimbledon, Yankees baseball, NBA playoffs. And now I was just like, okay, I watched the Jazz, they lost. And then I haven't watched sports since. And I've like skipped tennis, which I really like. I've skipped Yankees playoffs. I've skipped, Kaepernick doesn't have a job, so I'm still skipping NFL. But in other words, it's not even that I'm like, we have more important things to focus on. I'm just like, no, I'm not even thinking about sports. I'm not making like a conscious decision to be like, I don't think I can watch sports right now. I'm just like, oh, right, fucking sports. I forgot because it's never on my mind. Would like movie theaters to open up. That doesn't seem to be going to happen ever. So it's going to be a real apocalyptic wasteland. But the good news is Hillary Clinton would have been so much worse than Trump. She would have been so much worse. Can you imagine how bad Hillary would have been? And it's so funny because you're like, no, the sad thing is when people, and the people I don't have time for, and I work with one, and the people who I have to ignore, whenever somebody tries to join in on the Trump sucks, and I'm like, you told me they were both the same. Like, I don't want to party with you at the Donald Trump sucks party if you were on the Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump suck party. Like if you were down with that, then you don't get to commiserate with me. You're part of the problem. You need to apologize before you come into the Donald Trump sucks party with me. or you need to talk in another corner of the room. But I'm not having that where it's like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. What a awful choice. I chose neither. And then I'm like, well, then you're part of the problem, because literally Hillary Clinton could have been murdering a person a day with her bare hands in the office. Way less death. She could have been murdering 10 people a day with her bare hands. Way less death than Trump. It's pathetic. It's pathetic how, like, this country will, you know, the same way, like, people give pardons. It's like Trump gave Susan B. Anthony a pardon and like, Jack Johnson a pardon and, like, all these old... One day, America needs to just issue a formal apology, you know, like they, like as if Hillary Clinton is like a Native American tribe that we destroyed. We need to, like, America will need to offer, like, on parchment and, like, with an official government seal, Hillary Clinton, we apologize for what we did. It was stupid. It was shameful. And to me, Trump is, you know, it's slavery, it's genocide of Native Americans, it's Jim Crow, and then it's Trump. No apologies to Japanese Americans and Korematsu, which is a close fifth. But as I've always said, if Franklin Delano Roosevelt had campaigned on we're going to lock the Japs up, and I say that not because that's a term I use, but I'm speaking as a racist 1940s person. If he had campaigned on that and then did it, that's on America. But he didn't, as far as I know, campaign on that. That was a frightened, wrong emergency measure taken. Doesn't make it right, but it was less of a premeditated thing. Trump came into office saying, Mexicans are rapists, we're going to ban Muslims, Hillary's a crook, I'm going to lock up my enemies, the press sucks. Like he came in guns blazing with all the problematic things from day one. And America and its system, I know, yes, not a majority, but you know what? Enough under our weird electoral college bullshit system, enough were empowered to make him president off of that stuff. That was electing Donald Trump was premeditated suicide by 45% of Americans. That's what that was. It was a premeditated murder suicide by 45 or 46% of voting Americans, and everybody who stayed home, you know, you're complicit in that too, as high-minded or as lazy as you want to act. Not people whose vote were suppressed, but people who took the principled stand of going, I'm not voting. They're both terrible. And I did see this on, it was one of those things that I had to say something and I didn't get a response from him, but Ted Alexandro is a big-time comedian in New York, and on his Instagram, he had posted like a photo of Trump's net worth, Chris Wallace's net worth, and Joe Biden's net worth, and was like, great, three millionaires discussing the fate of America. And it got a lot of likes and a lot of amens. And I just commented, and one person liked it. But I was like, didn't Joe Biden get rich when he was like 72? Like, wasn't he the most broke-ass member of Congress? He needed money. Obama offered him money to help with Bo Biden's medical bills. So, as pure and as righteous as a lot of people act, that was one of those things. And I didn't want to get too high. I didn't get too high-minded on it because I was like, well, I'm sure this is partly a joke, but it really did feel more like social commentary. And I was just like, so if the rule is you can never get rich, to me, if a dude gets rich selling a book in 2015 after 45 years of government service where he was like the most broke member of the U.S. Senate, I don't know if you can really call him out for being just another millionaire when he was only a millionaire for the last 3 years of his 77-year life. Seems kind of unfair, but nobody really cares. I just think there's ignorance, hate, and stupidity on the right, and on the left there's some stupidity and some sheltered righteousness, I think would be the way I'd put it. And the thing is, you vote for Joe Biden. That's it. You got to vote for Joe Biden. I already did, folks. Me and the righteous girlfriend went and put our ballots in the big box, in one of those big sealed metal boxes. So let's hope it gets counted. Although, to be honest, I'm not even fretting this because when you think about it, it's like I'm in Jersey. It's going for Trump. Cory Booker's going to get reelected. I voted to legalize marijuana. So how about this, guys? I live near a vape shop. Let me tell you something. If weed gets legal, Yes, I'm a former prosecutor, folks. Okay, I respect rule of law and law and order. Comedians who worked with Blue Lives Matter. but if they legalize weed, I don't know. Maybe once a month I'll be doing like the righteous high prick. I don't know. I haven't thought of a pun because I'm not into weed culture. I probably won't just because it annoys me. But who knows? It'll be interesting. So I voted to legalize it. Look at me being all libertarian and shit. but yeah, like my vote, that's what's so fucked up about our system is that I'm not sweating whether my vote will matter or not. It doesn't matter that much because at least as far as like presidential election, it's like Jersey's going to go for Biden. That's why I wish it was popular vote, but I voted, I trust the mail, but they've lost things of mine. Like I don't trust the mail where I'm at, not because I think anything corrupt is happening in my neck of the woods. I just think there's some general incompetency. Like I've 3 issues of the New Yorker in the year that I've lived here have gone missing. Have not been delivered, and my first primary ballot didn't get delivered. And I said, that's enough reason for me to just walk it. they're 2 for 3 on getting me my ballots. They got me the makeup ballot and they got me the general election ballot. But I don't like the 66.7% rate of success in getting me my franchise. Okay. And also, the New Yorker, 3 for 44. I mean, going 41 for 44 on the New Yorker is also not that good a rate because I lived in my apartment in Manhattan for 11 and a half years. I don't think I ever missed a magazine in 11 and a half years of any kind. Victoria's Secret, Home and Gardening, Gent, they all arrived on time. So I guess that's it, guys. That's this. I always have shit to plug, but I already bored you with that stuff. So I think that's it. And I don't know how many of you gave to the Joe Biden fundraiser I did, but I was the number one fundraiser on the whole show. They raised $10,000 and one comedian was responsible for 1,700 of those $10,000. And that one comedian was J.L. Covan. So thank you. If you're listening to this and you donated to that or watched the show or just donated, forgot to watch the show. I think I'm supposed to be on another fundraiser, the best of, because a lot of people, their Zoom links went to their spam folders and shit. So I think this weekend they're going to do a best of show, which I will be on. So that'll be cool. But thank you for donating if you did. And let's just hope everybody... I'll end on this, Jerry Springer's final thought. I hope that Donald Trump recovers, loses in a landslide, gets prosecuted, and spends, maybe not his final days, but enough of his days in jail to pay for some of the crimes that he's done. That's the best I can do. I hope he pulls through. I hope he faces some earthly justice. And I will pray for him when he faces God's righteous justice. it's just he's a terrible person. He's a horrible president and a worse person. And it's so weird living through these times. But, I have confidence that under a Joe Biden administration, at least states like mine will get the help they need. I mean, they might have riots and protests in places like Florida and Texas. But you can keep them. Okay, you have Ron DeSantis. You enjoy that, but I'll know that at least we'll be safe up here under Joe Biden. And hey, if all the other states want to come along with a blue wave and live normal lives and do what's needed to get the country back together, welcome aboard. And if you don't, please just stay in your shithole of Tampa and don't come to New York and get anybody sick or do stupid things. So amen. That was the JL's prayer. So thank you for listening, guys. I got to get back to work now. So this was fun, sort of. Probably one of the worst episodes I've done recently because I'm coming off of a couple of bang-up episodes. And I think that's it. I think that is it. I'm just trying to make sure that's it. Yeah, that's it. So thank you guys for listening. Have a great, safe, healthy week. Vote Joe Biden, and I will see you next Tuesday.